Occasionally, I like to let you in on what's going through my mind, which is a scary thing sometimes. When my child gets up here and helps with communion, sometimes the thought that comes to mind is the time that I accidentally introduced instrumental music into the church. And I was on the communion table, not on the table, but I was working on the table. That would have been awkward. I was doing the communion table when I was probably about 9th or 10th grade. And at the time, we would have it in the morning, and then in the evening, we would have it also, and instead of the library, we would have people come up to the front rows. And they would come and sit on the front rows if they needed communion. And this generally was the time that the teenagers learned about leading prayers and all those kinds of things. And so I was on the prayer for the juice that night. And I was very nervous about it. It was the first time I was going to pray in church. I was thinking through everything I was going to say. It was Christmas time. And I was there, and because I was doing communion, I had a coat and tie on, because it was very important. We wore ties back then sometimes. And as I got ready to do the prayer for the juice, I said, "Let us pray," and I leaned into the microphone there at the table, and my tie hit the table. Now, the detail of the story that I have left out to this point is it was Christmas time, and my mom had bought me a tie that if you squeeze the bottom of it, play Jingle Bells. And unbeknownst to me, also if you happen to hit it with a table at the bottom, it will also play Jingle Bells. And so just as everyone got very quiet and I said, "Let's pray," it hit the table and through the microphone, you hear electronically dashing through the snow on a one-horse open sleigh. And the whole youth group was sitting right about there. And I start to see the shoulders going like this of the shaking. And I have never been more embarrassed, I think, in my life than in that moment. Hard to get that out of my head, but it was a funny thing for everyone else. I want to remind you again about our pictorial directory, but before I do, I didn't realize this could be up here right away. I want to thank everybody who took part in all the work over this past week, and especially on the weekend. Now, Roy didn't mention because he's humble, but Roy and Brett spent the better part of an afternoon putting 88, I believe, LED light bulbs in all these lights. For one of three reasons, either so you could see better this morning, or if you don't like that one, because LED takes less power than the old incandescents, we're saving the earth in our own way, or if you don't like that one, they're cheaper in the long run. So one of those reasons is why all those are in there. But they spent a lot of time on a ladder that requires three people to carry in this building way up high in things that I would never do, putting all these lights in, so we're very appreciative of that. Also, jokingly, Denise and I were talking during the week about Roy did an awful lot of the things we were going to do on work day during the week. This is something Roy likes to do. And we laugh, but we appreciate all the hard work that he does. And then yesterday, the 24 that showed up did exactly what I asked Denise to make sure they did, which is finish the work before I'm done with the men's prayer breakfast thing. So that when I get here, there's nothing left to be done, and just exactly what happened. Towards the end of the thing, my wife texted me and said, "We're done." And I said, "Yeah, that was exactly what I had in mind." So thank you for all your hard work that contributes to my laziness. All right. Now, pictorial directory, before we move on, it is coming up May 7th through the 9th. There is a sign-up sheet with times there in the back. We would ask that if you would help us and be a part of this and be a part of the church history here, to sign up for a time to have your picture taken. It won't take a whole lot of your time, and you'll get a free 8x10 out of the deal. And do not feel obliged to buy anything beyond that. That's totally up to you. Also, there will be a couple things coming with that we'll put out there next week, which is one, if you'd like to bring any canned food items that will go to our pantry, the organization that does our pictures will then give you $5 off anything you want to order. Again, totally up to you if you want to order anything. Also, if you have any friends who'd like family pictures taken, if you bring them along, they'll give you a discount too. So we'll have price lists and all that stuff out there for anybody who'd actually like to get pictures this coming week. I think that's everything I was supposed to say about that. Did I forget anything, Denise? Okay, good. We do hope, though, that you'll be a part of that. I see a lot of people have signed up online already. If you don't like to do the online thing, you can do it on the bulletin board, and we will plug you in online so that you can be a part of that. Also, if you were out of town that weekend or have a work schedule issue that weekend, there is a church in Harrisburg that is doing a directory with the same people, and they have told us that if you feel like driving scenically to Harrisburg and looking at the sheep in the fields and all that, that you can go there and tell them you're with our church, and they will do it for you there. So we will get the dates for that for you also. All right, after all that, if you'd like to open up to Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7. We're going to look at a couple of healings that Jesus does here in the latter part of chapter 7 and what we might be able to learn about Jesus and God through that. We'll begin in verse 24. Jesus left that place and went to the vicinity of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know it, yet he could not keep his presence secret. Which brings me to the question, does this sound familiar to you? If you were here last week, we talked about Jesus getting the news of John the Baptist's death and wanting to go off to a quiet place, and yet everyone else did not have quiet place in mind. And so the crowd follows him and they have needs and wants, and he ends up feeding those 5,000 people in the previous thing that happens. Now, I would ask you as you read through the Gospels to notice how many times this happens, where Jesus has in mind to go off to a quiet place. Now, there are a couple challenges, I think, to us that come with this. The first being, I don't know if I spend enough time trying to go off to a quiet place. I think if you were to ask me, what is the weakest part of your spirituality? One of the things that I might think of is my prayer life. Even when it's really good, I think to myself, it could be better than it is. And part of that is the fact that I am not intentional enough about finding times to do that. I have had times, and you would look at me and you would think, well, the nature of your job makes this a little easier. You know, if I'm working on an assembly line and I stop to close my eyes and pray while things are going by, something bad could happen. If I'm in the midst of trauma in an emergency room, and I'm one of the people working there, something bad might happen if I take too much time and lose the focus and go away by myself. The nature of my job is, honestly, if I showed up here, and I usually show up here around 9 in the morning, if I took the first 20 minutes after a big cup of coffee to pray, I don't think anyone would frown on that. And yet so many times I find myself taking that first 20 minutes to check the email, see what's going on, to look around, to hear what's happened at church the previous day, and even I will find myself going in the wrong directions. And then I look at Jesus, and his habit is to go and find a solitary place. Now, it's not always something that happens because other people have different things in mind, but his intent is to do that. And I would ask of each of us, how many times do we have the intent to go off to a quiet place by ourselves and have some time to just be? Or have some time to speak with the Father about whatever's going on. For Jesus, so many times that's interrupted, which brings us maybe to our second thought, which is, when that is interrupted for me, how do I react to it? And for me, a lot of times it's frustration and impatience, like we talked about last time. And instead, for Jesus, we see his willingness to interact with the people who interrupt. In fact, as soon as she heard about him, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an impure spirit came and fell at his feet. And if you were this woman and you had this daughter who was in need and there was nothing you could do, would you not go to any length? Would you not go anywhere, to any place, anything you had heard about that might help? Wouldn't you be there? If you had the means, if you had the ability, and even sometimes if you didn't, you would try to do other things to make that happen. This woman wants to get to Jesus. She's not interested if it was supposed to be a quiet day for Jesus. She's not interested in the fact that no one's supposed to know he's there. She needs his help for her daughter. Now, the woman was a Greek, born in Syria and Phoenicia. She begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. Now, this woman has a lot of things going against her in the culture in which she's in. First of all, she is a woman. Now, think whatever you want about women in our culture today. I looked online yesterday and saw a big debate developing on somebody's Facebook page about why we have not yet had a woman president. And everybody's got their ideas for why it is. And some people think the right person hasn't run yet. And some people think that there's something about our society and women. Any number of things. And we have those kinds of discussions in America today. We talk about unequal pay and all those kinds of things. We talk about the history of our culture and what it has done with women. We are nowhere near what they experienced in this culture. If you were a woman, you were a different kind of citizen there. People did not look at you the same way. If you talked, all those jokes that we hear today about sexism, they were real then. Why do you even think you can speak here? This is not your place. This is the kind of thing she would have to deal with normally. Not only is she a woman, she is a Gentile. And when you're talking about a Jewish rabbi, a woman and a Gentile, there are already two strikes here about whether this conversation even takes place. Third, she has a daughter with an evil spirit. So she has gone beyond just being a woman and a Gentile. There is now a demon involved in this whole thing, and she is deemed to be unclean. Now, I don't know what you think about this kind of thing in our culture today, and I hope that people don't read us in this way, that they don't assume we look down on them. But what they would have had in this culture is a totally, totally different experience than what we have. Where not only is there the perception that the people, the Jewish leaders, the rabbis, are looking down on these people, there is the reality that that is actually what is thought and taught. These are lesser people that if you are to mix with them, not only is that not okay, but you then make yourself unclean by doing that. It's a whole different thing than what we experience today. And so not only do we see that Jesus' quiet time is interrupted, and what he has in mind for what he's going to do is not going to happen now, but we see this woman who is pretty gutsy about approaching him in the first place, and then a moment for him to react. His reaction in verse 27, "First, let the children eat all they want," he told her, "for it is not right to take children's bread and toss it to the dogs." Dogs are a little different in our culture today. I've learned this getting to know some of you even, that dogs are different in our culture today. I like dogs. I am not a take my dog everywhere I go person. I am not a put a sweater on my dog person. I am not that wrapped up in my dog. I can remember one of our dogs passing away when I was a kid. I was sad about it, but if you got me about a month past there, I don't know how affected I was by it. But when I look around today, people are affected. I saw just this morning someone where I came from whose dog had passed away yesterday. They were very, very upset and sad about it. That is not, much like this woman and her plight in this culture, that is not what dogs were in this culture either. We watched The Amazing Race. And I'm just fascinated by the trips around the world and all the things they see and all the chaos that goes on and all of that. It's a neat thing about life. They saw wild dogs in Africa yesterday. And these wild dogs, they're on a truck, and they're throwing raw meat to these wild dogs as part of one of the challenges they're doing. And these are not dogs you want at your house. These are not dogs that are going to hang out under your table. These are not dogs that you are going to put a sweater on. These are a very different kind of dog. And this is how dogs would have been viewed in this culture. Dogs are scavengers. Dogs are not something that is friendly, not something you want to hang around with. And so when Jesus brings out this picture of dogs, it's not only offensive in the way that we might take it, it's offensive to another level of dogs are not well thought of in this culture, which would make us think for a minute, well, Jesus, isn't that kind of harsh? I mean, here you're comparing this woman not to somebody's pet, even that sounds a little harsh, but at least they love their pet. You're comparing this woman to something people don't want anything to do with, something people fear. And yet, in a lot of ways, isn't that the life that she has probably led? She encounters people daily who want nothing to do with her. She encounters people who fear her child. Imagine when you had kids that were small and people would come up and see how cute they were. Saw one this morning. Just so cute to have those little babies around. If instead people were fearful of your child, people parted ways when you came through. This is the life this woman is leading. And so he says, not even the dogs. Lord, she replies, verse 28, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. She replies with the word Lord. Now there's an interesting thing here with the word Lord. If you go through all 16 chapters of the book of Mark, the word Lord is used to refer to Jesus one time, right here. She gets it. Now, there are those who think this is just a term of respect. There are those who think that it's something more than that. Whatever it may be, the only person in this account that refers to Jesus as Lord is this woman here. She understands coming into the house that there's something that he has to offer that she can't get anywhere else. And not only that, she understands that she's not going to take the quick no here. She's going to push just a little bit harder because this is too important. Then he told her, "For such a reply you may go. The demon has left your daughter." She went home and found her child lying on the bed and the demon gone. And so I ask the question, what does this tell us about Jesus? Because when I look at Jesus, and you start at John chapter 1, when it says that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, you've got a Jesus who was here from creation on. And then in the early part of the Gospels, he takes on human form, and he comes to earth, and he's partly example for us to live by. But a big piece of who he is us to better understand who God is. God wants us to know about him enough that he sends his son in the form of a man so we could see how God would interact with people. We could see what God would do in situations. We would see how God feels about people. And it's interesting to me that this is not the view of God I see in our culture today. The view of God I see in our culture today is a God with so many rules that you can never keep up, a God who is waiting for you to mess up so he can get you, or maybe a God that's Santa Claus and you just ask him for stuff. And instead, what we see here is a view of God that is, even with this woman who does not fit the mold of who would be following, his desire is to make her daughter whole. His desire is compassion. His desire is for the good to happen. And does the good always happen? No. Things get off track all the time. But is he out there waiting for us to mess up so he can get us? No. That's not who God is. And even in a moment where he begins in the story with a refusal because of who this woman is, he still wants to see that her daughter is healed. And so he does. Which takes us on to the next story. He leaves Tyre. In verse 31, he goes through Sidon, down to the Sea of Galilee, into the region of the Decapolis. There were some people that brought him a man who was deaf and could hardly talk, and they begged Jesus to place his hand on him. They begged. When was the last time you begged for something? I want you to think for a minute, because most of us have had some time like that along the way. I don't know if it was, we were talking about school in the high school class this morning. There are people that get so far gone with a class they're taking, whether it be high school or college, and they feel like they're in a hole they can't dig out of, and they knock on that teacher or professor's door, and they walk in and they sit down, and they beg. They beg to get through that class somehow. They beg for extra credit. They beg for anything. There are people who have messed up in life with their family, and they sit down on a couch or they sit down in the office of a counselor and they beg. They beg for this to be made right. There are people who have found themselves on the side of the road with the blue lights behind them, and that kind officer comes to their window and asks them if they have any idea how fast they were going, and they beg. But we don't like to beg a lot, do we? It's weakness, it's a lack of power. We like to be in control of things. These people beg for their friends. And I wonder, when we think of the free gift of love that is coming from Jesus to us, that really ought to be the kind of thing that in any other way we would need to beg for. Do we understand how big, how important this is? There are so many people that live with that philosophy of, if you don't work for something, you don't appreciate it. I know I heard a lot of that growing up, and I know I looked around me and saw a lot of that living itself out. I wonder sometimes, do we fully appreciate what we have here? Do we fully appreciate the gift that has been given to us? They beg for their friend. After Jesus took him aside, away from the crowd, Jesus put his fingers into the man's ears, then he spit and touched the man's tongue. He looked up to heaven, and with a deep sigh, said to him, "Ephphatha," which means be opened. I wonder, as I read this story so many times, what is that deep sigh? I wonder, is it the tiredness of the day that has never got the quiet solitude he's been looking for? I wonder sometime, is it the sadness of seeing so many people with broken lives or with medical things going on that it's just too much some days? I wonder if it's just a desire for God to show his work and what's about to happen. But for whatever reason, he lets out just this deep sigh. He says, "Be opened." And at this, the man's ears were opened, his tongue was loosened, and he began to speak plainly. And like we've talked about with some of these other miracles, he did not go to speech therapy. No offense to speech pathologists who may be here. He did not have to relearn anything. He began to speak plainly because these miracles that Jesus did, they are immediate and they are unexplainable in any other way. Jesus healed. These people begged and he healed. And this brings me to the thought of James chapter 5 and verse 16 that says, the prayer of a righteous man is powerful and effective. Is God sometimes just waiting for us to ask? The way Matthew puts it, ask and it will be given to you. Is he waiting for us to ask so that he can heal, so that he can do, so that he can work? Jesus commanded them not to tell anyone. I love this. And we can think there are 100 different ways of why he does this. Now, he came into that first town not wanting people to know where he is. Maybe this command is so the crowds don't get any bigger. Maybe this command, one of my favorite theories I've always heard on this is reverse psychology. If you tell somebody, don't tell anyone, what are they going to do? Go tell everybody. Maybe this is to see what they will do, to see if they will listen. But he says, don't tell anyone. And if you have the best news, the best gift, the most amazing thing that has ever happened to you has just occurred, you've got to share it, don't you? It's so hard to hang on to that. But he says, don't tell anyone. But the more he did so, the more they kept talking about it. And I want you to think again of this idea of we don't beg anymore. And we don't always share the important things anymore either. People were overwhelmed with amazement. He has done everything well, they said. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. People were overwhelmed with amazement. So I asked you already, when is the last time you begged? Now I want you to think, when is the last time you were overwhelmed with amazement? We don't get amazed by stuff much anymore, do we? Yesterday, I saw online, was the anniversary of Apollo 13 splashing down safely to Earth. Love the movie, love the story. If you're not familiar, you're not a space junkie like I am. Apollo 13 goes up. It's to be the third mission that lands on the moon. They have a problem when they separate a couple pieces of the rocket, and they are not going to be able to land on the moon, and it goes from that mission to a mission of, can we get these guys home safely? Just moments before anything went wrong, they had a TV broadcast. And understand, and those who were around during all that time, you know, TV was not what it is today. There were not 200 channels of things going on all the time. And when they broke into some sort of live TV for a news report, it was a big deal. When Armstrong lands on the moon, Cronkite breaks in on CBS to live TV. It's a big deal. Apollo 12 goes up, they land on the moon again, they break into live TV. It's a big deal. Apollo 13 does a live feed from their spacecraft, and the networks don't carry it. Only three networks, they don't carry it, because this is old hat now. And the astronauts have no idea they're not carrying it. They're doing their live broadcast, and everyone at NASA is watching it. No one else sees it until the video is released later. Wives were there watching, trying to figure out why they see on a TV screen something else going on. Nobody cares anymore. We have lost amazement. This story and what Jesus does and what he does for us should amaze us. We should be overwhelmed with amazement. And I think we have moments of it, but if you're anything like me, they're few and far between. And it seems like we have to have reminders every now and then. We should be overwhelmed with amazement for what God has done for us in such a way that if someone came to you and said, "Don't tell anyone about it," it would be the hardest thing in the world to keep your mouth shut. And instead, we go through day after day after day after day where we don't tell a soul. And meanwhile, the world around us is searching for something. Searching for meaning. Searching for something bigger than themselves. And we have the secret. And yet we don't share it. We need to see this in a way that these people who take their friend to him and beg for help see something that is mind-blowing and amazing, because that is what this story is. The fact that God would send his son here for us because he desires a relationship with us that much, there is no better story than that. So this morning, I would challenge you to disobey the title of the sermon. Because "Don't Say a Word" is not good enough. This news is too big, too important. This morning, I hope you already in your mind have someone in there that you're thinking to yourself, that's the person I need to be sharing the story with. Might be a coworker, might be a family member, might be a neighbor. And if you don't have that someone in your mind, maybe God is going to throw that person in front of you this week. You will encounter someone that you've not thought about before. Maybe it's someone that's in your daily life that you don't give a lot of thought to, or maybe it's someone you meet for the first time. There is no better news you can tell them. Has this weather in Eugene been great? Absolutely. Is this not worth talking about more than that? I've talked about how great this weather is several times over the last couple days. Not as important as this. So this morning, if you are not telling that story, who's going to? You show people pictures of your grandkids, because if you don't, who's going to? You tell people about that thing that you finally redecorated at your house, because if you don't, who's going to? We need to tell people about Jesus, because if we don't, who is going to? This morning, if you need to respond to that story for the first time, this is the time to do that. This morning, if there are things that your church family can help you with, come and talk to us about it. Let us pray for you. This morning, if you just, sitting where you're sitting right now, need to commit to yourself that I'm not going to be content anymore to not say a word, because the people here in Eugene or in Springfield or wherever you might have driven from this morning, they need it too much, then make that commitment where you're sitting this morning. But whatever needs you have, please come as we stand and sing.